The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So a couple of weeks ago when I was giving a talk, I was talking about the third noble truth, the truth of the possibility of the ending of struggle in our lives. Actually, I think of it as the Buddha's statement that, you know, happiness is possible. We can actually be happy in our lives. And in that discussion, in that talk, I talked a little bit about the contribution of confusion, of ignorance, in why we struggle, how we struggle. And I said, you know, in that and in the subsequent questions, I don't remember if it was in the questions or just in the talk, I realized it might be helpful to spend some time talking about delusion or ignorance. And so that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. What is it that actually gets in our way of happiness? What is the understanding of what gets in our way in terms of actually being happy in our lives? And so that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. And we often talk about these qualities of mind that kind of get in our way in terms of, you know, how we struggle, especially how we struggle mentally. I mean, there's always going to be physical pain in our experience. And, you know, the Buddha said that that's going to continue. You know, the Buddha had a bad back. You know, he at times had to say to one of his monks, like, you got to give the Dharma talk today. My back's hurting too much, so I'm going to go off and lie down. So that, you know, that kind of physical pain isn't going to go away. But the kind of mental reactivity to whatever happens in our lives, that's what the Buddha promised was possible to be free of, this reactivity. You know, liking things, wanting to keep things, hold on to things that we like, and then suffering when the law of the way things are, that things go away, things dissolve, things end. And we suffer when we, you know, feel like we figured things out. Yes, I've got it right. You know, this is the way it's supposed to be. And then it lasts for, you know, maybe a day, maybe an hour, maybe a couple weeks at most, and whew, it'll fall apart. And then we feel like we've done something wrong. We feel like, why me? What have I done wrong? And this kind of struggle around feeling like something's a problem when things change, this kind of struggle is the kind of struggle that the Buddha said we can actually be free of. Likewise, the struggle around things being difficult, challenging, you know, things that we don't like, want to get rid of. And a lot of aversion, pushing away, a frustration, of anger, of hostility, that kind of mental state of mind that leads to really unpleasant experience and leads us to act in really unskillful ways. That too, the Buddha said, was possible to be free of. And so we talk a lot about greed and aversion. Greed being the kind of part of mind that we want to hold on to things that we like, and that we're struggling to keep things that we think are the way we'd like them to be, pleasant. You know, that when something pleasant is happening, it seems kind of natural to want to try to keep it, to hold on to it. And it's not that I'm saying that we shouldn't appreciate pleasant experience. Appreciation is a different thing than trying to hold on to. Appreciation kind of has the sense of an open hand of, oh, that's lovely. Whereas grasping, greed, is more like, no, that's mine. I want to keep it. No, I don't want to share that. That's mine. So it's got more of a tensing feeling. And so that's greed. And then aversion, the pushing away of things that we don't like. And we talk a lot about those in our exploration of how we struggle. The other aspect or other quality of mind the Buddha often pointed to as being a kind of a root cause of our struggle, of our difficulty, was delusion. That we function with delusion in our minds, and that leads us to act in unskillful ways, leads us to struggle, leads us to suffering. And so delusion's a little more challenging to get a hold on, to understand. How do I know when delusion is operating? It seems like it's just by its very nature, it would obscure itself. And so I'd like to explore a little bit tonight about how we can begin to see delusion, how we can begin to understand it. And it begins, I think, by having a sense of how it works in our minds. And so having a little bit of an intellectual understanding of how delusion works can help us to begin to actually start to see it, to actually start to understand it as it's working. So the first thing to recognize is that delusion can actually come out of greed and aversion. When, for instance, when aversion is present, it can become a kind of a filter through which we're seeing our experience. So we're looking at our experience through an attitude of not liking things. And maybe you've experienced this. You know, you get into a state where you're angry at something or not liking something, and it seems like every place your eyes land is unpleasant. You know, everything you see becomes seen through that filter of aversion. And so essentially what that is doing, it's putting a kind of a veil over our meeting experience. So we're seeing experience in a particular through this particular filter, which means that we're not really seeing it accurately. We're not seeing it as it is. We're seeing it through a filter. That filter may lead us to see certain things, to have our attention kind of naturally inclined towards, in the case of aversion, inclined towards things that are unpleasant. I've seen that in my own experience, that when I'm in a state of aversion, pretty much everything that my attention lands on is unpleasant. I have to go looking. If I want to kind of counter that tendency, I have to consciously say, okay, yeah, but there is some pleasant experience here. You know, it's like there's this filter that's guiding my mind to pull the unpleasant out of experience, and it's like it won't see the pleasant. That's a form of delusion, because we're not really taking in what's actually there. We're taking in kind of selectively what's there. And so that's a form of delusion. And that will come back. I'll come back to that idea of the selectivity. That's kind of a theme of delusion, actually, that the mind becomes selective or sees things through a view or a filter. But delusion is actually more, kind of more fundamental than both greed and aversion. That, greed and aversion arise because delusion is present. Delusion can come without either greed or aversion. So I'll come back to this later. You know, that may be a little bit kind of a koan to just like put out into the room for a moment. But I will come back to that later. That delusion can exist in the absence of greed and aversion, but greed and aversion always come with delusion. They're rooted in delusion. So delusion, to just explore delusion itself, in my both my study and my reflection on this topic, I kind of like to talk about it in three different ways, like look at delusion from three different perspectives. And they kind of each get more and more subtle. The first level of delusion is kind of the more obvious kind of delusion. And when we think of delusion or ignorance, actually, and they're the way I'm talking about them tonight, they're kind of synonymous. The the ignorance. When we think of the word ignorance, we usually think of kind of a not knowing something, you know, that we're ignorant of something. We don't understand something. We don't know something. The ignorance that underlies our struggles, you know, the Buddha actually said that ignorance is like the root cause of our suffering. And that ignorance results in, you know, greed, aversion, and delusion. And delusion is almost synonymous with ignorance here. So this ignorance So I'll just come back to these three layers. And if I can find that thread, I'll come back to that. I lost it. So these three different layers of delusion. There's the first layer I like to think of as kind of the kind of obvious layer of being disconnected from experience. I remember that thread. Now, so the ignorance of that underlies our suffering is not just a simple absence of information. It's more pernicious. It's more insidious than that. It's actually an active misunderstanding that, like those filters I was talking about, like those filters that kind of obscure how we take in information, ignorance, delusion, functions like a filter that prevents us from being able to see reality clearly. So it's actually an active misperception. It's not a simple not knowing of something. The ignorance actually fundamentally alters how we take in experience. And that I'll talk about more as we go along. So these three layers, the first layer is a not knowing, an uncertainty, a confusion, disconnectedness, a restlessness. This may be kind of what we might think of as delusion, just not really being connected, kind of being spacey. You know, that is a kind of delusion. And then there's a delusion that's due to views, opinions, beliefs, ideas that we have that are given to us by society that we've created based on our conditioning. And then there's a deeper level of delusion that's more this pernicious level of distorted perception. So I'll talk about each of these three and give examples from my own experience of how I've begun to explore this aspect of the mind, this deluded nature of the mind. So the first part, this lack of connecting, the disconnection, this is like when we're lost in thought. You know, when we're not aware of what's happening in the present moment because our minds are just creating some kind of a story and we're living in that story. You know, it's really, it's very amazing how our minds will create like a bubble, a world that we can live in. It's like a dream. You know, when you wake up from a dream, how there's a kind of a sense of, wow, I was really in that dream and didn't really know that it was a dream. You know, sometimes we know we're dreaming, but often we're just really immersed in it. And then when we wake up, we recognize, oh, that was just a dream. Well, the same kind of thing happens with our thoughts. You know, that we remember something or, you know, a memory arises and we're living in that memory for a while. And you know, it's just like a bubble of unreality that we're living in. Or we create some future, some idea of where we're going to be. And again, we're living in that reality when and we're not attuned to what's happening in our actual experience here and now because we're living in this bubble. At one point, this was a really clear example of this for me, and I've used it before because it was so clear. I had been working with letting go of a lot of emotional reactivity around a breakup. And I had pretty well let it all go. It wasn't disturbing me anymore when I thought about the person, you know, thought about my ex-boyfriend. It didn't like spin me out into anger or hurt or sorrow or any of those things. So the thoughts could come up and they didn't spin me out anymore. But what I started noticing was that the mind had a habit of remembering that relationship. And I would find myself waking up into, you know, being back in the relationship. And by this point, the relationship had been over for a couple of years, you know, so it was a long time ago. And, you know, the mind created this memory, and I would, like, poof, wake up into it and be like, such confusion. He's like, wait a minute, I'm not in that relationship. But the mind had created such a world of reality that while it was in those thoughts, it was like the relationship was there again. It was just this interesting, you know, the bubble burst. And it's like, whoa, that's confusing. That's interesting how the mind created that. Now, I think that it was so clear to me at that point because there was no longer the reactivity. You know, in previous, earlier in my process of working through letting go of the reactivity, if I'd woken up into a thought like that, what would have been clear was not the unreality of the thought, but all the hurt and the pain and the sorrow and the sadness that would have been generated by realizing, oh, that's not there. So I would have been kind of overwhelmed by that. But in this case, I wasn't overwhelmed by that, so I was able to just really clearly see how the mind had constructed a world that was completely mental. We do this a lot. This happens a lot in our minds. So this moment of coming back into mindfulness, when we wake up into thought, that's a moment when we can begin to see a little bit of a distinction between what is it like when the mind is kind of lost in that world of confusion and delusion, and what is it like now to be present and aware. So we get a little bit of a taste of what the delusion is like, that state of just being in a completely constructed, unreal reality, in the moment when the mind comes back into awareness. Because there's a distinction in that moment between what it's like right now to be aware and what it was like just a few moments before to be in that unreal world. So we can get a little bit of a flavor of what that kind of delusion is like in that moment of waking up. There's a great quote from Shakespeare. I was watching The Tempest, and a relatively new version of The Tempest. It's a film version, and I had seen it a few times, but for some reason this time there were a couple of quotes that stuck out in my mind. It's like, wow, that's a great description of delusion. So after I'd finished watching the film, I went to the book, because I have a copy of the play, and I searched them out, so I found them. So this in this one case, this description of delusion, there are these two characters watching another character. In The Tempest, these people have been kind of washed up, shipwrecked on a kind of an enchanted island, an island with a kind of a sorcerer. And these two people are watching this other person who's been enchanted. And he's doing all these things, you know. He's like, you know, fighting demons and, you know, doing things that are just like, you know, they're not there. He's living in an unreal world. And they're talking to each other about this guy, and they say, this is a strange repose, to be asleep with eyes wide open, standing, speaking, moving, and yet so fast asleep. That's actually a lot of how we live our lives, standing, speaking, moving, and yet so fast asleep. Then the second layer of delusion. You know, this is kind of the most obvious layer, and that also you can see in, you know, if the mind is dull or sleepy, there's a kind of a fog over your experience, or if the mind is really restless, it's like it's jumping around, it's hard to be very clear about what's happening. So just that place of unclarity of mind is that first layer of delusion. The second layer is a delusion that's based in views and opinions or concepts. And this layer that I'm talking about now is kind of based on personal societal conditioning. So, just for instance, kind of an example of the societal delusion, not at this point, but, 500, 600 years ago, maybe even longer ago than that, the notion that the earth was the center of the universe. You look, your experience tells you that the earth is the center of the universe. You look up there and the sun goes around the earth, the moon goes around the earth, the stars go around the earth. I mean, who would think, based on your direct experience, that the reason that's happening is that the earth is spinning around really fast? I mean, you take a ball and put it in water and spin it around and all the water droplets fly off the earth. I mean, you'd think that if the earth were spinning that fast, we'd all just fly off it. So, completely counterintuitive. So that, that idea that the earth is the center of the universe, there was some kind of physical evidence that seemed to support that. And everybody agreed with it. So everybody looked at the world from that perspective. And this, because they were looking at the world from that perspective, is actually somewhat hard to see evidence to the contrary. It took a little bit more care in looking at what was going on to begin to notice the evidence about what was actually happening. So when we're thoroughly immersed in a particular view, we don't necessarily even see the view at all. It's like people living, that in that time, it wasn't like an idea that, it's a view that the earth is the center of the universe. It was just the way it was. It's kind of like, the air we breathe, not really noticed because it is such a shared view. Everybody believes the same thing. There's no reason to, have it really be up in your mind. This is a view. This is an opinion that the earth is the center of the universe. Why would anybody think that? Everybody thought the same thing. So it's very hard when we're thoroughly immersed in a particular view to see that we're perceiving things through a view. So again, this is a form of delusion, that when we're looking at things from a particular perspective or a view, it's hard to see that view itself. So this is part of the deluding nature of delusion. It obscures itself. So some examples of this in our actual experience. When we have an agenda, when we have something that we're doing, we have kind of some thing that we have to accomplish something, that agenda can create a filter on our experience that prevents us from seeing everything. It's like we become, our attention becomes selective, because this is part of the way our minds work, in a way that it's like we're really focused on accomplishing this thing. And so the mind naturally kind of screens out those things that are not relevant for that task. And so we miss things. We can miss stunning things. I've told this story also before, but it's the best example that I've heard of this, how this works. And that's kind of the dramatic nature of this aspect of having an agenda screening things out. I mean, my first example around this before I heard about this study was I was in my garden and I was picking Bermuda grass. I had a Bermuda grass infestation. And initially, it was pretty hard to see the Bermuda grass. But then I started getting more familiar with it. And then it became very easy to see the Bermuda grass. You know, I would close my eyes at night and I would see the image of Bermuda grass. You know, it was like that filter was just right there. You know, I'd look at my yard and the mind would see Bermuda grass everywhere. And it's like, oh, I can pull that, I can pull that. It was probably also, I don't know, but it was probably also screening out things that were not Bermuda grass. I mean, it wasn't seeing what was not Bermuda grass. But hard for me to actually, you know, say that it wasn't seeing things that were not Bermuda grass. So this study that kind of really highlights this, they did a study where they showed people a video of people playing basketball. And they were passing, the people on the video were passing a basketball between each other, and the people who were observing the video were invited. They had an agenda. They had a task. They were asked to count the number of times the basketball passed between the people in the white T-shirts. So they were counting, you know, how many basketball passes happened. And they could do that. You know, they could count that and pretty reliably get the right answer. And then the people in the doing the study asked them, was there anything unusual you noticed in the video? And most people said, well, no, not particularly. A few people said, was there like a gorilla that went through? You know, was there some... And in fact, there had been a guy in a gorilla suit that had walked right into the middle of the basket, people playing basketball, and had stood there for a few moments and then had walked off. And it was very slow, very deliberate, and it was like really obvious. It's not like it was off in some corner or something. It was right in the middle. As large as all the basketball players was this gorilla, this guy in a gorilla suit. They did not see it. Their attention, the agenda they had, screened out that. And they were so convinced in their own perception, and this is really even more mind-blowing, they were so convinced in their own perception that when they played the video back, many of them said, that cannot be the same video. I would have seen that gorilla. So this is actually the power of our mind to screen things out when we have an agenda. So this is a form of delusion that we're not able to see everything that's happening. And the other part of the delusion is the belief that we have had accurate perception. That's really the scary part. I mean, I just got one of those forms to fill out to go to jury duty. And I'm thinking, am I going to believe anything anybody would say? I mean, I know so much about how the mind is capable of delusion. You know, it's just so hard to you know, believe. I mean, even if somebody's a very credible witness. You know, all these people in these studies, very credible witness. Did a gorilla walk by? No, I'm absolutely certain a gorilla did not walk by. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of scary what our minds are capable of. So this notion of the agenda screening things out. And then there are views about ourselves and about other people. And this, we can feel kind of boxed in by this. You know, we know this when people do it to us. You know, that we people have views or opinions about who we are and how we do things, and we feel like, well, you know, you don't know who I am. You don't know who I am. You know, that's not the way I am. That's not me. This kind of people create, and we all do it. We all create opinions and views about who other people are. In our family of origin, you know, this is a big struggle for us, you know, having left our family of origin and radically changed and then going back to our family of origin and our family of origin still seeing us like that, you know, that 10-year-old or whatever, you know. So we feel boxed in by the views other people have of us, but we do the same to other people. And we do the same things to ourselves. We have views and opinions about who we are. We have views about what we can do and what we can't do. And we box ourselves in with that. There are views that can be created from incomplete information. And then because we have had a particular, you know, it's created from some information, you know, we may say, well, yes, I experienced this. I know this for myself. And yet we may not know the whole picture. The classic story about this is the story of the elephant and the blind people. Anybody not know this story, the elephant and the blind people? So, okay, so I'll just briefly review it. It's that, you know, blind people were asked to experience an elephant, and some of them were shown the trunk, and some of them were shown the legs, and some of them were shown the side, and they were feeling it. So they're blind, so they're just feeling. So this is an elephant, the side of the elephant, or this is the elephant, the legs of the elephant, or this is the, you know, this is the trunk, this is the elephant. They're told this is the elephant, the trunk of the elephant. And then when they were asked to describe an elephant to each other, some people said, well, an elephant is like a hose, you know, those that felt the trunk. Or some people said the elephant is like the wall of a storeroom, those that felt the side of the elephant. Or some people said the elephant is like a post, those that felt the legs. And because they each had their own perception of the elephant through feeling it, they argued with each other. You know, no, you're wrong. An elephant's not like that. An elephant's like this. So we can create views out of incomplete information and then hold to those views and not be willing to let other information in. So we get some information, we have a correct perception there, but incorrect extrapolation. Then there's a kind of delusion that can result from... the delusion there is that you know the whole picture, and that kind of the delusion there is not that what you experienced wasn't delusion, but the idea, the view that was created, this is what the elephant is. That's where the delusion is, because then that view then makes it hard for us to take in the possibility that there's a broader picture. And then another way the same kind of, you know, this level of delusion can function is at the level of concept. And that when we experience things, we often experience things through concept. And this is a feature of our minds. It's a good feature of our minds that it's kind of a shortcut, you know. It's like, you know, I'm driving down the freeway and I don't have to, like, figure out that all these moving things are other cars every time that I'm driving on the freeway. You know, I you know, the perception, the mind works fast enough and creates the understanding of how all of these objects interrelate. And, you know, we relate to the experience through the concept. I walk in here and I, you know, I see men and women and I see floors and carpet and wall and windows and chairs, and, you know, I don't have to, I mean, these are concepts, and I don't have to, like, create out of form and color every time. I don't have to create, I don't have to do the work to create this understanding of what's happening here, of people sitting here in this room together. So this is a very useful feature of our minds, this concept part, the part that makes, creates these shortcuts. They're like little shortcuts so that we don't have to figure things out every time we come in across them. You know, you watch a baby interacting with the environment, you know, that you see the kind of awe and wonder of new things in their experience, and they're creating concepts moment by moment. So concepts are very helpful, and they are also very prone to error. And we don't often see that we're seeing through concept. So this kind of way that we can see through concept, that we're experiencing our reality through concept, can become more clear to us when perception makes a mistake. So the kind of classic example around this is, you know, walking into a kind of a dim room and there's a coiled form in the corner, and you might, you know, especially if you're in Burma, you know, you might mistake it for a snake. You know, just that okay, you know, there's a fear arises, you know, so there's the perception that it's a snake, that the light is dim. And then there's the mind spends a little bit more time with it and begins to recognize, no, it's not a snake, it's just a rope. It's just a piece of rope in the corner. So when our perception makes a mistake like that, we can start to see how we relate to experience through concept and then react to the concept. So that example of walking into the room and seeing the snake, the coiled rope as a snake, fear arises. The fear is not a result of an actual snake. It's a result of a concept that was created in our mind. And that becomes more clear than, you know, it's kind of a form of delusion that happens, that we're reacting to concept rather than the actual experience. Now again, this is useful. If it is a snake, it may be useful to have fear and walk slowly out of the room. But again, to just point to these places where our mind can not meet reality as it actually is. The third level, the deepest level of delusion is, so what I've just been talking about, you know, this delusion based on concepts, delusion based on views, ideas, opinions, agendas, you know, that we are seeing essentially things through a filter and not taking in information in a completely accurate way. That's, you know, delusion that's based on societal conditioning, on personal conditioning, on just, you know, an individual. You know, we'd all have different ones of those. We all have different kinds of agendas, different ways that we relate to concepts. This next level of delusion is more human. We all share this next level. It's kind of the deeper misunderstandings. It still functions in a very similar way, that there's a filter through which we're seeing experience, a kind of it's a perception, a concept, a way that we're seeing experience, but it's a set of concepts that we tend to share. There are three basic ways that this human delusion functions, three most basic kind of distortions of reality that happen for us. And these are that we tend to see what is impermanent as permanent. We tend to see what is unreliable as a place for happiness as a reliable place for happiness. And we tend to see what is not self as self. So this is kind of the deepest form of delusion. And this is the one of my teachers, one of my Burmese teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, talked about this kind of delusion as a delusion that doesn't mask experience. And so we're actually connecting with experience in this form of delusion. But it's masking the true nature of experience. So in this form, delusion doesn't prevent us from meeting the experience, as some of those other ones I was talking about, you know, that we might not see the gorilla. You know, in this case, we see the gorilla, but we're seeing it not in its true reality. So these three tend to obscure the true nature of experience. Another quote from Shakespeare. Again, two characters talking to each other about one of the other characters who's exclaiming about this place where they've arrived. And one of the characters says, "He misses not much." And the other one responds, "No, he doth but mistake the truth totally." And again, that is a a way that our minds distort our experience through these misperceptions. And I'll just kind of briefly go through these three, because I've got about 10 minutes left. So seeing what is impermanent as permanent. How does this happen? You know, what is that about? Partly, this happens because things are changing pretty rapidly. And our normal level of consciousness, our normal level of meeting reality is kind of not taking in the rapidity of change. It's kind of like watching, you know how when you watch a film, when we used to watch movies, they were like individual screen shots, and that they would just go really rapidly past the projector, the light. And so you get this sense, this illusion of continuity, because the movement was happening so fast. Was flipping between the different still shots very rapidly. It's kind of like that with our experience, that there's just different, completely different moments of experience flowing through so rapidly, but our normal level of perception masks that because it's happening so fast. As we begin to explore in our meditation, as we begin to actually look at our experience, the meditative mind, the quiet mind, can actually begin to see this rapidity of change. And you might see this a little bit even if you look at some sensation. You know, if you just like put your attention in your hand right now, feel the experience of your hand. You might notice, close your eyes for a moment and just feel into it. You know, you might feel vibration or tingling, little kind of sparks of sensation, pulsing. So you might get a sense of changing nature of the sensations of hand. There's not a lot static there when you just feel into the experience of hand. But when you open your eyes, you look at hand, you think about hand, you think about what it does for you as a hand. It reaches for things, it grabs things, it holds on to things. When I think about my hand in that way, it tends to kind of block in a way that detailed, dynamic experience of the changing nature of experience. So that's also another way that this change is masked, is through concept. You know, we create concept, and actually, as I move from side to side here, the entire visual field is shifting. And when I'm in a deeper state of meditation, I can see that. It gets a little bit like on a boat, it's like everything is like wobbly, it's like everything shifting and changing. Every time you move your head, it's like the whole room moves. Most of the time, that's not the way we perceive it. When I move my head now, it's like the room stays still. It's just that I'm moving my head. Because the mind has the concept of the room, the chairs, the people. And likewise, the hand, the idea of hand kind of can obscure that detailed nature of change. And so as we start to look into our experience, we start to see the actual impermanent nature of everything that's happening. So as we begin to explore in meditation, what's going on? Those moods, those feelings, they come, they go. Body sensations come and go. So we begin to actually unmask this belief that things are permanent by seeing into the changing nature of experience. And seeing what is unreliable as reliable, this is a big topic. I could probably talk for weeks on this topic. We tend to, when we find things that are pleasant, it's like, yeah, that's good. That's what's going to make me happy. You know, it's like sense pleasure. We think sense pleasure is what will make us happy. If we arrange our lives so that we have things in our world the way we'd like them to be, we have the right house, the right relationship, the, you know, a good job. We arrange our lives in a way that we have the things that we want, that will make us happy. And this is pinning our hopes for happiness on things outside of us. You know, we're actually saying, yes, these things outside of me, that's what's going to make me happy. And what's outside of us is so unreliable. Relationships change. Queens, New York. Houses burning down, you know. Few hours, you know, homes. It's like the things we count on are unreliable. The things we pin our hopes on for happiness are unreliable. It's not a mistake. It's not something that we've done wrong. It's not a reflection on us personally when things change, as they do. That first aspect of impermanence. Basically, that's what makes everything unreliable, because everything is impermanent. There is nothing out there in the world that is a reliable place to pin our hopes for happiness. So this is a delusion, this notion that we can be happy by having what we want. That's just a kind of a really fundamental misunderstanding. We think that having what we want, that'll make me happy. That's the as good as it gets. So that's a kind of fundamental misunderstanding. So that's the delusion there. That misunderstanding is the delusion. If I get what I want, if I get rid of what I don't want, that will make me happy. That's where greed and aversion spring from. So that delusion of that is what will make me happy, that's where greed comes from. That's where aversion comes from. We think that if I get that thing, that will make me happy, and that's where greed is born. It's born out of that delusional misunderstanding that having that thing will actually make me happy. Then this last one, seeing what is not self is self. 2 minutes for this. Maybe I'll take this into the next time I'm here. Because this is worth a bigger discussion than 2 minutes. So I will carry on with this next time. But I will just say a few words about it, since I have now 1 minute. This is basically, you know, that we identify with emotions, we identify with things being me, things being mine. And what's actually happening is simply a process. You know, it's just this thing that I think of as me is just a set of changing conditions. So a quick example around this, you know, I used to be strongly identified as being miserable. I was miserable a lot. This actually conditioned more miserableness. And there were times when I was not miserable. There were moments when I actually kind of came up from the ocean and breathe some air. It's like, oh yeah, this feels pretty good. This is okay. But what my mind did in that moment, because I was so identified with being miserable, was something like, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but I know what I really am is miserable. So, you know, it was like, this is a classic sense of, you know, not really being able to take in what's going on here. You know, miserableness was gone. It wasn't permanent. It wasn't me. I recreated the miserableness in that moment, identified with it, clung to it. What's actually going on is just miserableness arising, miserableness passing away, happiness arising, happiness passing away. When you can see that, that just what we take to be self, what we take to be me, what we take to be who I am, is just a set of conditions. This brings a lot of freedom. A lot of freedom. And I'll talk about that more next time. Next time, let's see, next week, what's today, the first? I think it will be 2 weeks from now. I'm up at Spirit Rock next week, so I'll offer a talk on not self in 2 weeks. So thank you all.